A real privilege to go to the VIP line and welcome Senator Cory Gardner back to the show. Senator, congrats on a big day.
Good morning. Well, good evening.
Yeah, no, it must feel like morning to you because the whole calendar's upside down there, isn't it?
It is. We've got a lot of work to do and hours of debate left ahead.
Yeah, tell us what's going on with the schedule.
So right now we basically are in the 10-hour debate period for final vote on the conference report, which is the tax relief package. And sometime later this evening, hopefully, you know, maybe around 8 o'clock Colorado time, we'll have a final vote on this in the Senate.
Wow, that is exciting. And then now there was a procedural glitch. It has to go back to the House for a rubber stamp. Is that right?
That's right. So tonight's passage in the Senate will be followed by a pretty, I guess, a formality in the House where they'll vote on the bill again and pass it, and then that's what will send it to the president's desk.
And when will the signing ceremony be, all those festivities?
You know, I don't even know if that's been worked out yet.
Okay.
I hope as soon as possible because obviously a lot of work has to get done to prepare next year's tax codes, forms, and reports. And something that I'm looking forward to, making sure that the American people understand that this is going to be real benefit to their bottom line.
Right. And the reason I asked that question about the signing ceremony is I think this victory and the optics from this victory and everything else, I think this is enormous in so many ways, even beyond this particular policy. But you tell us, you know much better than I do, what's in the final version of this thing. How do you feel about this tax package now that we are almost down to a final version?
Well, you know, I feel very confident that this is going to be good for the American people, that if you're a single parent and you earn $41,000 a year, next year you'll be paying close to $75% less in taxes next year than you are this year. If you're a median household income family of four in this country, you're going to be paying nearly 60% less in taxes next year than you are this year. So this is something that's going to put more money in people's pockets, and it's also something that's going to grow wages. You know, the Denver Post this morning talked about the fact that in Colorado we have very low unemployment, but we haven't seen real wage growth, and that's what I think this will help spur.
Right. No, and that is so enormous. I mean, in real life. So you think about, A, what's best for people, obviously, but then you look at the impact, you look at the political consequences, and it seems to me that by doing all these good things, this just sets things up perfectly for 18.
And it does. And I think what's more important than anything is the American people will see that Congress fulfilled a promise to go throughout all four corners of the country and make sure that we have a innovation agenda, that we have a country where opportunity once again flourishes. And we've taken this country that had the least competitive tax code around the globe and now made it one of the most competitive tax codes around the globe. And that's going to bring more investment from overseas into the United States. It's going to keep more dollars in the United States from leaving the United States. And this is something that every American is going to benefit from.
Well, I get excited about stuff that can really change the arc. And it seems like this has the potential to change the arc. And it's absolutely worth trying. I understand, and I'd like to know if you think this is legit, you know, that there are reasonable concerns about whether this will add to the deficit. But it seems to me that rather than increasing the deficit for a sugar high, this could really change the arc in the way you just described when it comes to, you know, attracting jobs, creating jobs, et cetera.
Well, in many of the estimates that came out of some of the congressional analysis that was done, they didn't even take into account the amount of foreign direct investment that would come into the United States as a result of us lowering this tax code. So they don't even calculate that other people may decide that the U.S. is more lucrative now to invest in.
Why wouldn't
you
leave
that out
of
the equation?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
How could you not include that? Because isn't that the first thought? Wouldn't most people rather be here than there? The only reason they're there is they're getting a much bigger break on their taxes. How do they leave that element out?
It's pretty remarkable. And then and then the fact that you have this dynamic growth that I believe will occur, and you have other congressional entities saying that we're going to be stuck with this sort of secular stagnation. That's a fancy Washington way of saying the economy has been bad, so you better get used to it. You know, we don't have to get used to it. We ought not to get used to it. We ought to be better than that. And so that's what I think this growth is going to lead to. It's going to show that America can win again. It's going to show that we can innovate, that we can flourish, and that we don't have to settle for second best.
Amen to that. And the president ran on that. I expect that's going to be a theme of the midterm elections as well for GOP candidates. And that resonates with Americans because truly who, across party lines, you know, aspires to be mediocre?
That's right. And if you look at the complaints against the bill, I mean, the initial opposition to the bill came in people who don't like to cut taxes. They opposed it because it cut taxes. The next step, they said it will kill thousands of people. The tax cuts will kill thousands of people. Then the third alarm bell they rang was this will be the end of times as we know it. Nancy Pelosi saying that this is the worst piece of legislation ever to cross the Senate floor, you know, forgetting apparently about the Indian Removal Act and the Aliens and Sedition Act and other atrocities that Congress has seen over the history of this country. But that kind of overreach, I think, and hyperbole is going to do one thing. In February, in March, in July of next year, when Americans see their paycheck and they're earning more money as a result of this tax cut, I think they're going to realize that we did a good thing for this country.
No, amen to that. Senator Cory Gardner, our guest. Hey, if you don't mind switching gears for a second, you talked to Rex Tillerson yesterday, obviously Secretary of State. Fill us in on that.
Yeah, it was a conversation about many of the reforms that he's trying to undertake at the Department of State. This is one of the great tragedies of travesties of Washington, where you have an entire department that hasn't been reauthorized for over two decades. And when that happens, it means that the nuts and bolts of the agency haven't really been investigated, studied, and made sure that it's all working as it should. And so that's what this administration is trying to do, is to make sure that they get this program aligned in a way that makes sense for modern-day diplomacy. And he was sharing it with the bipartisan members of the Committee on Foreign Relations, and so that's what he's working on. We also had a conversation, obviously, about terrorism, North Korea, and many of the other concerns around the globe.
Yeah, and listen, you've been four or five steps ahead on North Korea for years and years and years. So what is your take on where we're at right now and what's likely to happen in 18?
Well, this morning I met with Ambassador Yoon. Ambassador Yoon is the United States envoy, North Korean envoy, who's basically tasked at the State Department with addressing the North Korea challenge. And, you know, here's where we are. North Korea is belligerent. They have decided they don't want to talk to the United States. They want to continue their nuclear program, putting their pedal to the metal, so to speak, in terms of developing their nuclear abilities and capabilities. And that's a danger for the United States. And so while they're refusing to talk and negotiate, they're ramping up their efforts on development. And so we've got to, including, get our neighbors, including China and others, to push forward on a full embargo of North Korea, cut off their crude oil supplies, make sure that we're stopping the enablers of North Korea from continuing their work. Siberia has 30 to 40,000 North Korean slave laborers, basically, that are sending money back to North Korea to prop up the regime. Yeah. That's got to stop. We've got to be doing more as a globe, and we have to have the full commitment from China to start doing this.
Hey, do you have two more minutes?
I do, yes.
Yeah, you've been generous with your time. I'll want to apportion that time. First, quick follow-up on that. Timing, do you think North Korea is going to have full capability sometime in 2018, meaning both the nukes and the ballistic missiles, to deliver them to Denver?
You know, I think we can only assume, based on their most recent ballistic missile success, that they now have the ability to bring into range the entire U.S. homeland. That's based on the altitude and the trajectory of their most recent ballistic missile experience. Now, whether they have the ability to place a miniaturized nuclear warhead on top of that can survive reentry, I don't think we know that now. But the problem is, if we find out about it, it may be too late, and that's an unacceptable risk. And so that's why we don't have time to dilly-dally on this. We don't have time to wait around. We've got to figure out how to ramp up pressure on the regime, using our neighbors and our allies to do the same, to put enough pressure on the regime to force them to the table.
Mm. Last couple of questions. I think you're serving this state and the nation tremendously well, and in part that's in your capacity as head of the Republican Senatorial Committee, going out there and trying to get all these other Republicans elected to the U.S. Senate in 18. So with that in mind, how do you feel about the outcome last week in Alabama, and where do you see the 18 midterms going now for Republican senatorial candidates?
You know, I think President Trump had said it in a tweet the day after the Alabama election that he was right, that he was concerned that Roy Moore couldn't win Alabama. That's what President Trump said. That's why he supported Luther Strange. I think Alabama was a rejection of a candidate, not a rejection of a conservative agenda. And if people think that Huntsville turned into Hollywood overnight and the blue wave begins in Alabama, then there's probably an iceberg in Texas for somebody. And so this is, I think, a rejection of a candidate, but it shows why we have to do everything we can around the country to put forward good candidates, candidates who can run on conservative principles and get the job done for this country. And I think that's the message from Alabama is, this wasn't the person that Alabamans wanted, and they spoke.
And finally, I thought one of the sweetest moments in the last year was the left. I think I was watching CNN mocking you for saying, hey, Doug Jones, come and vote with the GOP. And then 2 days later, Doug Jones is talking about, no, Trump shouldn't be removed from office, et cetera. So wait, what do you see shaping up there? How often do you think you'll be able to get Doug Jones to go with the caucus?
Well, I think if you look at a state like Alabama, where it is a significantly, vast percentage conservative state, that he's going to vote Republican more often than not on big issues. And if he's representing Alabama, that's what will happen. So I think the left may not like it. The mainstream media may not like it. But Alabama, like I said, is not California. It's not New York. It's Alabama. And if he's going to represent that state, then I think he has to be somebody in the line of Richard Shelby or Jeff Sessions to do that job.
Well, hey, congrats on the big tax reform victory, and appreciate the time tonight.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, Dan. Thanks.
Take